Good. So for those of you who've been coming, we are in our 3 months or 4 months theme of clear seeing, the path of Dharma. And over these next months, the teachings that are given here by myself and others will be relating to that theme. And I'm begun in the last weeks picking a couple of these mindfulness trainings that Thich Nhat Hanh developed for what he called the order of interbeing. I've talked about that in past weeks. That's available, I believe, on the web, these past talks, as well as there's a whole book called Interbeing, the 14 Guidelines for Engaged Buddhism that have these in them, as well as Thich Nhat Hanh's commentaries. A number of weeks ago, I began with the one on that life is available only in the present moment, that it's possible to live happily in the here and now. When I was here last week, I looked at number four, aware that looking deeply at the nature of suffering can help us develop compassion and find ways out of suffering. And this morning, I want to look at number two. Because when we talk about Dharma, which is the teachings of the Buddha, when we talk about right view and clear seeing, we are saying that if we don't have a map, if we don't have a guidebook, it is very difficult to find our way through life and come to a successful conclusion. Many of us are lost in our conditioning. We're lost in our history. Right? We're lost in our emotional stuff. We're lost in our misperceptions about life and ourselves, what we talked about earlier with the complexes. You know, we misperceive things. We run after things, we grasp at things that we think will bring us happiness, and they don't. Right? We grasp at things because we're looking for permanence, solidity, but we are grabbing the wrong things, right? We seek permanence and stability in a universe where there is no permanence and no stability. So we're always misperceiving things. We don't understand cause and effect. We don't know really why do things develop? Why am I the way I am? You know, why is he or she the way they are? Why is the world unfolding the way it is? If we don't understand how to look deeply at causes and conditions, we will misperceive. So Dharma, teaching, is giving us a map and a guidebook so we can find our way and we can see clearly, right? We know what to drink. We know the difference between poison and we know the difference between something that is nourishing. Right? We know what's good for us and we know what's bad for us. But oftentimes, because of our own conditioning and the culture we live in, that's not clear to us. So fortunately, because there are people like the Buddha and other great masters and teachers in all many traditions, their teachings help point a lot of truths out to us so we don't have to stumble about in the dark. Is that clear? You know, so the light's on, so at least, you know, we know, we can see what's going on. So this is all... this is why we not only practice meditation and mindfulness, but also why we study Dharma, and that's why we're focusing on this. So this is really part of that, the second, and I'll explain how I see it's related. And it reads, aware of the suffering created by attachment to views and wrong perceptions, we are determined, and again, the we is These are the 14 trainings of people in this order of interbeing, and so they recite them. So that's why they're written this way. So it says, aware of the suffering created by attachment to views and wrong perceptions, we are determined to avoid being narrow-minded and bound to present views. We shall learn and practice non-attachment from views in order to be open to others' insights and experiences. We are aware that the knowledge we presently possess is not changeless, absolute truth. Truth is found in life, and we will observe life within and around us in every moment, ready to learn throughout our life. It's quite wonderful. I hope, I don't know if you're as deeply moved by this. So even though Buddhism is filled with teachings, right? And even though, this period we are studying the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha, again, and you probably heard me say it before, the Buddha did not discover these truths by thinking about it. He came to his enlightenment because he deeply observed through the process of meditation and deep looking. He deeply looked at life as it is, not as it appeared. He looked deeply and he saw that things that he thought were true, things that he thought, believed would be the source of undying happiness and to him, were not that. But he saw that only because he was willing to put aside all his beliefs and perceptions about life and look at life itself as it is. Is that clear? Please understand that that means that every one of us has that capacity. You do not have to be a philosophy major, a comparative religion major. You don't have to be a meditation wizard. We use those as excuses. All we need to do is put aside all our usual ways of perceiving and thinking about, put it all aside, and using a certain kind of methodology, look at life. Look at one's own life. If the Buddha's Dharma, if the teachings are true, then they have to accord with life. Right? The Buddha's teaching is not theology. This is important to understand. It's not just something, it's not a belief system that you have to adopt blindly. From the time of the Buddha until today, all the teachers say, I teach Dharma is the truth of reality, the way things are. And if that's really true, we can doubt them, then we should be able to see it, right? It's not mystical, it's not metaphysical. So, this last line, truth is found in life. What is life? This is life. Yeah. That which you're doing every day, waking up, showering, eating, going to work, having relationships, this is your life. This is life. If the truths of Dharma, of Buddhism are true, you should see them in your life. You should have seen them, if you reflect deeply, operating throughout your life and see them operating now. If not, they're not true. Aware of the suffering created by attachment to views and wrong perceptions. So he begins with that if we don't do that, if we are attached to our views just because why? Because they're my views. What better reason? Right? Can you think of a better reason for being attached to it other than it's mine? This is the way I see things. This is the way I remember things. Right? And this delusion and the suffering it creates works in a relationship of two people, and is as significant in international relations, between countries, right? People are attached to their views. I have the truth. I know what you're thinking, right? You know, I used to be a therapist in my prior incarnation. You know, 30 years I listened to people, right? In deep suffering, unwilling to let go of their views, of who, of their view of reality, of who's right, who's wrong, who did what first, what really happened back then. I know, you know. You know, even though it was just so overtly causing them suffering, they would not let go of their views. They were attached to their view. A view is just a view, right? You know, I'm over here, I have a certain view of the whole. I go back there, I'll have another view. Which is the right view, which is the wrong view? They're just views. You know, if I could be up there, I'd have another view. If I laid on the floor, I'd have another view. Right? If I covered one eye, I'd have another view. If I put on purple sunglasses, you know, shaded, I'd have another view. Right? They're just views. I mean, this is deep. This is the source of so much. So please be aware that the suffering that is created by attachment to views, not by views. Right? The problem isn't views, the problem is what? Attachment to views. Right? Right? I mean, if I want to stand over here and I like the view of the meditation hall from here, that's okay. Right? Somebody else says, I like the view back there. Angie's up there in the whatever that is up there. She says, well, I think this is a lovely, you know, this is, you know, that's fine, right? But once we start arguing which is the better view, which is the right view, which is the correct view, or once, you know, Angie orders me upstairs and says, you know, you got to be up here and see it the way I see it, you know what that road's like. And everybody in here has walked it. Some of you might have walked it already this morning. So we have to be aware. We have to, you know, this is a, you know, that this contesting of views, this attachment to views, this arguing about views and perceptions is the source of suffering. It is not the path out of suffering. I mean, is anybody going to say here, no, attachment to views, arguing views until the end, forcing the other person to see your views, this is the path of happiness and well-being? I mean, is anybody, I mean, no one's teaching that, is it? Are they? And yet, we live by it. So therefore, he says, we are determined to avoid being narrow-minded. We want to be broad-minded, right? You know, it says, yeah, many different views in this hall, many different views on life, many different views on a situation. Yeah, my view of what happened was this. I'm broad-minded, right? Rather than when somebody goes, no, I didn't see it that way. I saw it like this. Rather than our first response being, what? How dare they? Or I can't believe this, you know, they're such idiots or deluded, or, you know, they're so egocentric. Why can't they be more like me? You know? Right? I'm broad-minded. I go, oh, that's interesting. Tell me about your view. You know? Wow. You know? I thought that the view I had was the view, but Angie's up there saying, no, Fred, let me tell you what it looks like from here. And rather than arguing, I go, well, let me go up and take a look. That's interesting. I wonder what that view is like. You know, it could be it is a nicer view of the hall than the one down here, right? Or it may not be. I may prefer the view from the front, you know, from here. But it's not something to fight about, argue about. So we want to be broad-minded and not bound to views. You know, they should enshrine this in the Congress, you know, in the state legislature, right? I mean, what a different system it would be. People were not bound by their views and were interested, curious in other people's views, right? How simple. You know, mutual respect, understanding that none of us has the truths. None of us has truth in a view. We shall learn and practice non-attachment from views in order to be open to others' insights and experiences. That's why we're doing it, right? Now let me ask everybody here a selfish question. If you were in a relationship with anybody, I don't just mean intimate relationship, with family members, with work colleagues, with anybody, you know, all those are relationships. Would you like to be in a relationship with somebody who is open to your insights and experiences? Who would like to be in that kind of relationship? Of course. What's the problem? We know, for us, that's happiness. We'd like that kind of relationship. But don't ask me to give it to somebody else. Right? You know, why should I think about making somebody, why should it ever dawn on me that maybe if somebody's in a relationship with me, and if I was open to their insights and experience, I may be nourishing a happy relationship. That never dawns on us, does it? Because we're so what? Attached to our views. We're bound, we're narrow-minded. So, we are embarking on this study of Dharma over these months. You know, we have 100 plus people in an intensive who are very intensely looking at this, but we're inviting everybody through these teachings and readings to please be open to this. We are interested in learning other views. Yeah. So in our study of Buddhism, in our study of the Eightfold Path, the Four Noble Truths, the Three Marks of Existence, the Four Mind Turnings, and all these various threes and fours and fives and eights of Buddhism, please understand we are just opening ourselves up to a view about life. A view that has been handed down to us for 2,600 years. Right? And that a significant number of fairly intelligent, wise, developed human beings have said, yeah, this is a correct view of how life really is, how things really are. So it is important that we be open to it. That we put aside all our current views to be open. This doesn't mean you have to adapt, is that clear? Because truth is found where? In life, it says. Right? So it should not be, how does this view match these other views, right? But does this view concur with reality, with life? With experience. Did you see the criteria? And that criteria, if something is true, it is true for whether you're a male or you're a female or you're a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim or a Buddha, you know what I mean? If it's a truth or a believer or a non-believer, if something is a truth, right, then it should be experienced, you know, pretty across the board. Is that clear? Or it's not a truth. So these teachings tend to be truths about life. The Buddha only looked at life. There was nothing theoretical, philosophical in his approach. It was direct experimentation with life. Looking deeply into life, other people's lives, life in general, looking into his own mind, his own sources of suffering that were created by his mind. So again, thoughts, you know, these things. So please have that kind of openness. Again, this is not an openness saying be open, you know, like a cult, you know what I mean? Like, you know, get rid of all your prior beliefs and totally, you know, accept ours. This is not that, for those of you who are afraid. Mm-mm. No. The invitation is to test. Test it. The Buddha himself said, you know, and you've heard me say, the Buddha was a great quote from the Buddha, where his instructions to his disciples was, you know, and this is quite incredible for someone, you know, who had so many followers and so many people who wanted to follow him, where he said, you know, don't adopt what I am teaching you because you love me. Or simply because you respect me, or simply because you think I'm the Buddha, or you know what I mean? Test it through your own experience, right? Test it through your own experience. Does it make, and he went on, you know, does it test it through your own capacity for logical, analytical thinking? Does it make sense to you, right? Test it through your experience. Has this been my experience in life? When I look at it, you know, it's assessing, it's weighing. So please do that. The knowledge we presently possess is not changeless, absolute truth. I mean, is anybody here still thinking exactly the same way they did 30 years ago? No. I mean, can you remember things you totally believed in 10, 20, 30, 5 years ago, but now you don't at all? Yeah. That should teach us something. So if we are going to have truths in life that we operate by, that help us and support us, they should be truths that can be tested and proven in reality. You know, recently I read an interview with the Dalai Lama, and somebody was saying, you know, they asked him, you know, I forget, it was something sort of directly about if a fundamental truth of Buddhism was shown by science to be wrong, what would you do? And he would say, I would drop that Buddhist truth. If it is not proven. That's very wonderful. You know, for somebody who has the stature of such a honorable position within the Buddhist tradition, to say that if a fundamental tenet of belief of the Buddhist system was shown to be scientifically invalid, you know, what would you do? And he said, well, we'd have to change that Buddhist teaching, so it concords with reality. Truth is found in life, and we will observe life within and around us every moment, ready to learn throughout our lives. Kind of what we were doing in meditation today, right? Learning to be open to life. Mindfulness means to be present, to observe. What's really happening? What's really happening within me? What's really happening without me? What's happening to these people that I live with, that I pass in the street? What's really going on with them? Ready to learn throughout our whole lives. We don't have to close down. We don't have to become fossilized as we age. We can become more and more open to life, willing to learn throughout our lives. Good. So that's the second of these 14 mindfulness trainings. And we'll stop here.